Normal broadcasting has been discontinued.
Coming to you from Portland, Oregon,
the sports business capital of North America.
Keep your radio tuned to this frequency.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. Now, your host.
I tell you, I've never seen anything like that guy.
Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for checking out the only show in the country dedicated to covering the business side of sports. Happy holidays. Well, we're devoting our next two editions of Sports Business Radio to counting down the top 20 sports business stories of 2007. This week, we're going to count down stories 20 through 11. And next weekend, on our last show of 2007, we're going to count down stories 10 through 1. It's been a year full of sensational headlines. We're going to recap those stories this weekend and next here on Sports Business Radio. A couple of other notes, visit my Sports Business blog or download the SBR podcast on demand. Just go to sportsbusinessradio.com. Visit our new interviews page on our website featuring some of our best guest interviews. Just click on the podcast toolbar, look for the drop-down interviews link. I'm joined in studio by Nathan Roach. Nathan, happy holidays. Hopefully you have all your Christmas shopping done.
Almost done. Got a couple gifts, including the wife. I've put that one off the first year being married, so look
yeah, that's
out.
Right. It's the wife and not the girlfriend this year, so you better step up big. So this week's show and next week's show, a little bit different. The requirements for making Sports Business Radio's top 20 sports business stories of 2007 list. So you've got to have an important business element tied to your sports story. It can't just be a story that happened on the field. It's got to transcend and have some kind of a business impact. And then obviously the story had to take place in the calendar year of 2007.
Well, yeah, and I think looking at these stories, if you had asked us 3 months ago, there would have been a clear-cut winner. But in light of recent events, you know, we had to do some jumbling and do some talking and see what we'd get to for number one. I think you'll be surprised.
And we all kind of came together and, you know, bantered on these stories and which ones made the top 20. And there were probably some that were left off the list, and there were probably some that you might disagree with that could be higher in the order or lower in the order. But overall, I think that we're pretty accurate with these 20 stories, and we'll spend a little bit of time recapping over the next 2 weeks this amazing year, 2007. And then next week at the end of that show, we'll even give you a few of our predictions for 2008, because 2008, one of the big things on the horizon, the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, and any time you have an Olympic year, that's big.
Well, yeah, and I would like to reach out to the audience, and if you disagree with us, to our listeners, let us know. I want to hear why you think should be number one.
Info@sportsbusinessradio.com for that. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to go through headlines 20, 19, and 18 in our top 20 sports business stories of 2007. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. This is Brian Berger from Sports Business Radio. I know many of our listeners dream of a job in the sports industry but don't know where to begin. To me, it's an easy call. Go where sports business education got its start, at the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. As the first business school in the country to offer undergraduate and graduate programs themed around this multi-billion-dollar industry, the Warsaw Center offers a unique blend and strong general business training, sports business curriculum taught by industry experts, and rich out-of-classroom experiences, including real-world consulting projects, study tours, and internships. With a strong industry and alumni network and a staff dedicated to accelerating your career, the Warsaw Center has a proven track record of placing students in teams, league offices, corporate sponsors, marketing agencies, sports media, and sports shoe and apparel firms. But like any elite team, there's only a few spots on the roster. To learn more, visit sportsbusinessradio.com for a link to the center's website. The Warsaw Sports Marketing Center, passion, integrity, and leadership in sports business education.
Back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
We are back and we are counting down our top 20 sports business stories of 2007. We're going to start with the 20th biggest sports business story of 2007. And that story, NBA superstar Kevin Garnett traded from the Minnesota Timberwolves to the Boston Celtics. And Nathan, there's a reason they call him the Big Ticket. And you look at the impact that Kevin Garnett had on the Boston Celtics this year. TV ratings up 97%. Kevin Garnett's jersey, the Celtics number 5 jersey, it is the top-selling jersey in the NBA. And, you know, they're selling out all their tickets. I mean,
the Celtics are once again relevant after really being a stinky franchise.
Well, yeah, they're off to their best start since 1963-64 season. And you're right, Kevin Garnett has been the answer. He draws crowds. We talk about Kobe Bryant. We talk about Shaquille O'Neal. We always talk about big-name athletes coming into stadiums and putting people in the stands. And that's exactly what Kevin Garnett and his entourage on the court have done this year for the Boston Celtics.
Well, there are certain athletes, as you point out, that are iconic corporations in and of themselves, whether it's an Alex Rodriguez or a Kobe Bryant, a Shaquille O'Neal. Kevin Garnett is in that group. And when you trade a Kevin Garnett, you're never going to get fair value for him. And one of the things he'll do instantaneously, just like when the Cavaliers drafted LeBron James, he changes the value of your franchise. Your franchise value is automatically going to go up probably by $10 to $15 million, and you're going to sell a lot of tickets. You're going to sell a lot of jerseys. Your TV ratings are going to go up. And sure, Ray Allen was also added to the mix this year, but Ray Allen is not in that class of Kevin Garnett. And once the Celtics got Garnett, then you started seeing the big three appear on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, and in Sports Illustrated. And it's so good for the league, Nathan, because really, if the NBA doesn't have strong Eastern teams where most of the media resides in this country, in New York, in Boston, in Philadelphia, and those franchises have not been very good for the last few years, the league needed a strong franchise in Boston.
Well, yeah, and I would say that this is the one exception to what I'd like to call the sports business rule, as we talk about all the time that all these teams have star players and more than one star player. Here's a team that's been able to get it done on the court with more than one star player. I disagree. I think Ray Allen is a star player, and I think he's not at the Kevin Garnett status, but he's close. And they've managed to work together and have a very successful beginning of the season.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, you look at the NBA and you look at the Eastern Conference and you look at the Western Conference. Well, most of the powerful teams are in the Western Conference, and the Eastern Conference needs some power, and they needed to balance they just needed some better players in the Eastern Conference, frankly. And now Boston looks like they're head and shoulders above any other Eastern Conference team, and they may be able to give a Western Conference team a run for their money. And something that we'll talk about later in the show, a little preview here, but the ratings for the NBA Finals last year were the worst ever. So David Stern, the commissioner of the league, would love nothing better than for a high-profile team like the Celtics, a team that has won more championships than any other NBA team over the course of their history, to make it to the NBA Finals, where you have some high-profile players that people want to tune in to watch.
Well, yeah, and a good NBA Final. You know, we constantly mention the Phoenix Suns and the San Antonio Spurs. I remember you picking the Boston Celtics and, what was it, the Phoenix Suns,
right,
at the beginning of the year, talking of the season. This is great for NBA basketball. People want to see good matchups, good rivalries, and this might just produce it. I'd love to see Boston and San Antonio in the Finals.
Well, and last note on this, how about the year for Boston sports? I mean, from the Red Sox to the Celtics to the Patriots, even Boston College had a pretty good year on the football field. Quite the year in Boston sports. Our 19th biggest sports business story in the year 2007, the Indianapolis Colts win the Super Bowl, and by doing so, Peyton Manning really takes off. He was already making a lot of money in endorsements, about $11 million a year, but he added about $3 million a year in endorsements after he won the Super Bowl. Nathan, how many times have we seen it where you see a Charles Barkley or a Karl Malone, a Pat Ewing, someone who is a very good athlete, but they don't have that ring on their finger? Dan Marino comes to mind as a quarterback, but Peyton Manning really validated his career in. Companies want to be associated with winners. So when Peyton Manning, who is already high profile, goes out and wins that Super Bowl and now is a champion, he becomes even more attractive as an endorser.
Well, yeah, and I think especially when you have the charisma that Peyton Manning has, you know, he was always going to be a valuable endorser. But now you add that element, that next element to his charisma, in that he can show that he has success both on and off the field. And, you know, we see a lot of successful athletes kind of stay behind the, or away from the lens. We haven't seen that with Peyton Manning. Especially not this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, he did more than ever this year. He's got endorsements with companies like MasterCard, DirecTV, Gatorade, Sprint, and even Reebok. And one of the things that I thought he did a terrific job was he hosted Saturday Night Live after they won the Super Bowl, and he did a spoof on a United Way spot. If you've ever watched the NFL, you know that their longtime charitable partner is the United Way. And let's just say that this wasn't the straight and narrow Peyton Manning that you've come to expect. It's a YouTube classic, and it is one of the funniest spots I've seen. But Peyton Manning, I think, does a great job in the commercials. He's a pretty good actor.
Oh, I think he is, too. He's not LeBron James, but he does a pretty good job.
Oh, I think he's better than LeBron.
Really? Oh, I don't know that I'd go that far.
The other note here is that it was good for the Colts because Tony Dungy, who a lot of people respect and like as a coach, he won. He wrote a book, and he did some other things, so there were some opportunities.
Obviously lost his son recently, not too long ago, so yeah, it's a feel-good story.
It was a feel-good story, and, you know, for the NFL, and we'll get to this later on in the show, but for the NFL, who has so many problems this year off the field, whether it's Michael Vick, Pac-Man Jones, things like that, Peyton Manning has really become the face of the NFL. He's the golden boy for that league. Tony Dungy's a bright light for the league. And having the Indianapolis Colts win the Super Bowl was a terrific story and a great thing for the NFL to be able to promote. Our 18th biggest sports business story of the year, 2007. The college football season, as unpredictable as ever, Nathan. Last week we had Michael Slive, the BCS coordinator, the SEC commissioner, on the show. And we talked about the BCS format. And could we expect playoffs? Might we see a plus one? There's never been more debate than with this season. It seemed like every team in the top three at one point in the season or another, they lost.
Well, yeah, and number two seeds. That was like the curse of the SI cover. Every number two seed continued to lose. And you've never seen so many teams fall from grace this season. Teams that were number one, number two, that they were talking about one week competing for the national championship, who now are playing in bowl games that you don't even know how to pronounce anymore. It's been an unbelievable season, but the same thing is going to continue to happen. The Boise States of the world, the Kansases of the world, where they're going to say, hey, these guys should have had a shot, and without a playoff shot or without a playoff system, they're not going to get that shot.
Yeah, I mean, you look, Kansas, Missouri, South Florida, Cal, even Oregon, you know, they were ranked in the top three at one point during the season. Some teams that at the beginning of the season, you would have never expected to be in that top three or four slot. They had their chances. They lost. There was a lot of turnover. A lot of people think that LSU and Ohio State, a good matchup in the BCS National Championship game. But there are others that would rather see a playoff. I'm one of those people. And see what USC or what Oklahoma, teams like that, what they might do if there was an 8-team or a 16-team playoff. And as we heard from Michael Slive last week, the BCS format isn't going to change anytime soon. The soonest we might see a plus one is probably 2010, and it's unlikely that we're going to see an 8-team or a 16-team playoff probably anytime in the next 5 to 7 years. So if you don't like their current format, you're kind of stuck with it for a while.
And that's really unfortunate because we talk time and time again about how successful the NCAA basketball tournament is every year with underdogs beating the big names. And, you know, that happens during the regular season, but now we don't get to see it in the playoffs where it really counts. Can the underdog beat the big dog in the playoffs? We'll may never know.
Another big story with the college football season, the coaching carousel. First of all, these coaches are making more money than ever before. Nick Saban goes from the Miami Dolphins to Alabama. He's making $4 million a year. Bobby Petrino leaves the Atlanta Falcons for Arkansas. He's going to make about $3 million a year. You've got Rich Rodriguez, who leaves West Virginia and leaves them hanging for their bowl game. He's going to Michigan. Dennis Erickson leaves Idaho, and he goes to Arizona State. A lot of coaches shuffling places, and again, we're seeing these coaches paid more money than ever before. The average salary for a coach in the SEC, $1.9 million, ton of money.
Anybody that says that college athletics is not a professional corporation is wrong. Look at this. Look at the dollars here.
Totally agree with you. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to go through our top stories, 17, 16, 15. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We're counting down our top 20 sports business stories of 2007. We'll be right back.
Of a white Christmas.
Sports Business Radio talks to the people who call the shots in the world of sports.
My guest is Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. Let's go back to the year 2000. The year before you bought the Mavericks, they were 40-42. Fan interest was pretty lukewarm. When you bought this team, what did you see in this team? What was the potential that you saw to get them to where they are today?
Probably none.
Brian Berger goes one-on-one with the biggest names.
My guest is Dr. Miles Brand, the president of the NCAA.
I think the reason why we have a BCS-type system in Division 1A and elsewhere we have playoffs is that the schools in Division 1A feel that the regular season is the most important aspect of football.
Read the Sports Business blog and listen to SBR On Demand at sportsbusinessradio.com.
See, I think that's the big thing.
Sports Business Radio, Saturday, or online at sportsbusinessradio.com.
The website is sportsbusinessradio.com.
We are back and we are counting down our top 20 sports business stories of the year 2007. We're now at number 17. And Nathan, some historically low TV ratings for two sporting events that used to be amongst the most watched sporting events in all of sports. First, the NBA Finals. The NBA Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James and the San Antonio Spurs, a record low. They averaged a pitiful 9.2 million viewers per game. That surpassed the worst ratings ever. That was 9.9 million for the 2003 Nets Spurs Finals. Correlation there. Spurs
are boring. They're not exciting. The Spurs would have to play some real high-energy team. I think the Spurs would have to play the Suns. They might play the Boston Celtics this year to bring those ratings up. But overall, the Spurs cannot drive ratings unless there's another team that's as exciting. Now, it surprised me a little bit because at least they were playing the Cavs, but still, the Spurs are boring. And once they start to get ahead and it looks like they're going to win, everybody tunes out.
Well, and, you know, again, LeBron James is one of the big faces of the NBA. So I guess part of it is that it was a sweep, so it wasn't a real competitive series. But the other thing is, you know, the Spurs are very workmanlike. You know, they're just not flashy. And, yes, they have Parker and Ginobili who are more flashy than Tim Duncan, but they're from a small market. A lot of people on the East Coast don't watch them during the season, and they really don't care about the finals. So, you know, to put this in perspective, more people tuned into America's Got Talent, So You Think You Can Dance, and Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, than the NBA Finals. That's not good news for David Stern, and as we discussed earlier in the show, that's why if you're the NBA, you're hoping that the Celtics and some big names, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and maybe in the Western Conference, you know, you're able to get the Suns or an exciting team with some familiar faces into the finals where people want to tune in.
You're just hoping that the Spurs are not in the finals again this year. Now, even bigger story, and I know we're getting to this, is the NHL.
Phew!
The NHL ratings have been so bad the last couple seasons that they shouldn't even air the games anymore. Now, their only saving grace is next year when they have the big outdoor game. Everybody's expecting a lot from that game and maybe ratings through the roof. But for the season and the playoffs, terrible ratings.
Well, as we said, they should hold all their games outdoors because the outdoor games sell out. They find great sponsors like Amp Energy Drink, and people watch it on NBC. I was reading this week that Bob Costas is going to be calling that game on NBC. How bad were the ratings for the NHL on NBC? It got a 1.1 national rating. That means just about a million people in the entire United States. There's 300 million people in the United States watch that game. It was the worst primetime showing ever in the history of NBC sports or otherwise. The West Wing.
OxyClean infomercials, I think, get better ratings than that.
I'm not kidding. I mean, the West Wing on July 23rd, 2005, drew a 1.1 rating. So it now shares the title of worst rated primetime show in the history of NBC with the Ottawa-Anaheim Stanley Cup Finals. That is stinkeroo. And even the Players Association came out late this year and said, you know what, we've got to get back on ESPN. No one knows about Versus. No one has Versus. People can't find us. We have become irrelevant on TV, especially during the Stanley Cup Finals, on Versus. We need to get back on ESPN. This will be a story to watch in 2008.
Well, no longer, you know, not only does people not know about Versus, but a lot of people don't get Versus. It doesn't come with their cable package, so it's even more difficult, even if they knew of it, to be able to watch their teams play. And ESPN, we talk about it all the time. ESPN is the platform for sports, and for them to opt out of ESPN was the biggest mistake the NHL has made in terms of TV.
Well, and the last note on this is that Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, and his league are becoming more and more irrelevant each and every year. And unless they change things quickly, you know, they're going to find themselves rated behind things like the X Games and other MMA and other emerging sports leagues. Our 16th biggest sports business story of the year, 2007, Marion Jones, track and field star, admits to using performance enhancement drugs. Now, this had been rumored and whispered for years, but finally she admitted in October to lying to federal investigators in 2003. She admitted that she had taken the designer steroid, the Clear, from September 2000 to July 2001. So the IOC formally stripped Marion Jones of her 5 Olympic medals from the 2000 Sydney Olympics, and they also banned her from attending the 2008 Beijing Olympics in any capacity. They also took away $700,000 of her winnings, and I'm not sure how she's going to pay those because she says she's broke.
Well, yeah, and they also said they could bar her from future Olympic Games, which, you know, it's very tough to break into a huge marketing role for track and field. There's not very many big names that get these corporate sponsorships, and Marion Jones is one of them. One of the big Nike athletes we've seen fall from grace this year. We'll talk about another one later in the show, but this is so tragic, and it's such a trend right now that if you get busted for cheating, you basically lose all your finances.
Well, and Marion Jones was the face. She was one of the few faces of the 2000 games in Sydney. She won all those gold medals. She's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She had a huge endorsement deal with Nike. She became a household name in 2000. And as we learned this year, she did it by using steroids, the Clear. And, you know, I guess the thing that I still haven't figured out yet is why she felt compelled in October. Here for years, she denied using performance enhancement drugs. She took over 160 drug tests, Nathan, and she never failed one. Why did she come out in October and feel compelled to tell the world, guess what, I cheated?
Let me tell you why I think it is. I think that Marion Jones, deep down, is a good person. I think her conscience got so heavy on her with everything that's been going on that she finally cracked. I think, as we've talked about on this show, she got hanging around the bad crowd, if you'll use a elementary school type of analogy. I think that's what happened here, is she just wanted to get that much further and was hanging around the wrong crowd.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she was married to CJ Hunter. She was married to Tim Montgomery, both heavy PED users. And, you know, I've spent time around Marion Jones. I blogged about this, sportsbusinessradio.com, when this all happened in October when she came out and admitted using performance enhancement drugs. And I said, you know what? I think she is a pretty good person deep down. She is now in a good marriage. She's got kids. Maybe she wanted to come out and do the right thing. But I think she was peer pressured by CJ Hunter, by Tim Montgomery, to use drugs. They told her, hey, you know, no one's going to catch you. And again, maybe she would have never gotten caught. Maybe no one would have ever known. There would have always been the whispers. But she did come out in October, and now it's cost her legacy. One of several athletes this year in sports whose legacies have gone down the drain, and we'll cover that in future stories as we make our way to number one. The 15th biggest sports business radio story of the year 2007, the NFL Network battles for wider distribution. Now, this is the number one sports league in America, Nathan. To put things in perspective, and I know we've said this a million times on the show, the NFL makes about $3 billion a year from their combined TV deals. So they're making more money from their TV deals every year than the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, NASCAR, and the PGA Tour combined. They're making a ton of money. But one of the things that they haven't been able to get right is they start this NFL Network. And guess what? It's a pretty good network. I have DirecTV. I get it. I like the network. I think they do a good job with their coverage of the NFL. But one of their biggest battles is they haven't been able to get Time Warner and some of these other bigger cable companies, Comcast, to put them on the basic tier, and this fight has ensued. And in the meantime, only 35 million people in the United States get this network. It's a big secret.
I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me. I have Comcast, and there's been many times where I saw the good games were on, but they were on the NFL Network, and I don't get that channel. The NFL, I think that, you know, from what I've seen, the network is pretty good, but again, they need to platform themselves with your CBS, with your Fox, and with your ESPN, I think, to continue to be successful. I don't think enough people are going to switch, or there's going to be a deal worked out between Time Warner, Comcast, and the NFL Network.
Well, one of the things that's going to be interesting is this Patriots game is coming up, the Patriots and the New York Giants. And if the Patriots go into that game undefeated, going for a perfect regular season, that is really the last leverage point for the NFL, the last live game they're going to show this year where they can say, hey, we got some pressure on these cable companies to show this game. People are beating the drum and they want to see this game. After that, then you're going to have to wait until next year when, again, they'll have their package of live games. And for the next, you know, 8 or 9 months, I don't know if the deal is going to get done.
There's nothing more frustrating, though, than not being able to turn and watch the game on at your house with your package, and you have to go somewhere else to watch it. Drives me nuts.
Well, especially in this day and age. And, you know, you wonder, Major League Baseball, one of the things they did right is they're launching a network in 2009. And what they did from day one is they partnered with the cable companies. So they got on the tier they wanted to get on. They're going to be more widely distributed from day one at launch than the NFL Network is right now. So the NFL Network came into this thing and they said, we're going to play hardball. We're going to go with our exclusive out-of-market DirecTV deal, and we think that these cable companies are going to play ball. Well, so far, the cable companies aren't playing ball. They're saying that the customer isn't clamoring enough to make us want to play ball, and they're saying to the NFL, listen, you either make a deal with us, you lower your prices. They're asking reportedly 70 cents per subscriber, and networks like CNN and Fox are asking for 35 cents per subscriber. So the cable company is saying, you either need to come down in price or you need to make us a partner on your network. If that doesn't happen, we're not going to make a deal with
you. Wait a minute. Major League Baseball did something better than the NFL. Now, Major League Baseball doesn't have any room to wiggle. They have to do that. The NFL, like we just said, they're the big gorilla. They can muscle people around until they get what they want. Baseball, nobody's watching baseball right now, so they have to take what they can get.
But the problem is the big gorilla, no one's moving over for him right now. So this is going to be interesting. I think it's going to go into 2008. I'll be very surprised if this gets worked out before that Patriots-Giants game, but we will see. Coming up next, we're going to keep moving through our top sports business headlines of 2007, 14, 13, 12, and 11 before we leave you. And then next week, we're going to unveil the top 10 sports business radio stories of 2007. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
The mood is right. The spirit's up.
Hi, this is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. When I'm looking for a place to have dinner with family, friends, or business associates, there's only one restaurant on my list. Morton's The Steakhouse, the best steak anywhere. In its 28th year in business, Morton's serves only the finest quality foods, featuring USDA prime-aged beef, fresh seafood, hand-picked produce, and decadent desserts prepared to perfection. Not to mention the award-winning wine list. When my destination is Morton's, the best is always on the menu. And they treat me like a VIP during every visit, whether in the dining room or the private boardrooms. With almost 75 restaurants conveniently located around the world, Morton's is the gold standard when it comes to steakhouses. To find the Morton's nearest you or to make a reservation, go online to Mortons.com. Mortons, the best steak anywhere, and the official steakhouse of Sports Business Radio.
Really confused about the business side of sports? This is Sports Business Radio.
We are making our way through the top 20 Sports Business Radio sports business stories of 2007. We are now at story number 14. And Nathan, we've talked about this one a lot on this year's show. The mess that is the New York Knicks. What a year 2007 was. From the sexual harassment trial with James Dolan and Isaiah Thomas, they've got a losing record. They've got the highest payroll in the NBA. They're still paying Larry Brown. He doesn't even coach for them anymore, and they had to pay him $18 million just to go away. It has been one negative headline after the other for James Dolan and his New York Knicks.
I guess over $100 million isn't going to buy an NBA championship, and it seems like booing Isaiah Thomas has now become kind of a sport for Knicks fans. They're trying to get him out of there desperately, and you and I both agree that he should have been out of there a long time ago, especially after everything else that's happened in the league, you're going to let him continue to stay. Huge mistake. Knicks organization is in the trash right now.
Well, let me give you just a few examples of some of the bonehead moves they've made. First of all, in March, James Dolan signs Isaiah Thomas to a multi-year extension. A lot of people think he might get fired. No, Dolan signs him to a multi-year extension. This was based on the fact that the Knicks were 29-34 and 6 games better than the previous year when Larry Brown had coached the Knicks. What happened after this extension? The Knicks tanked it. They missed the playoffs again. Again, highest payroll in all of the NBA. Terrible return on the investment. They start off this season in the dump. They have, as of this show, they have the second worst record in the Eastern Conference. Then, as if that's not bad enough, this sexual harassment trial comes up with Anuka Brown and Anuka Brown Sanders. So she goes and she says, "I'm going to sue you, New York Knicks, for sexual harassment, and I'm going to sue you for $6 million. And they say, "You know what? We'll go to court with you. We're not paying you $6 million.
That's how arrogant they are.
Yeah,
this is the Knicks.
That's how arrogant they are. So what happens? They end up paying her $11.5 million. Who the lawyers are that advise them to not just settle? I mean, not only do you pay $11.5 million, but you go through several weeks of embarrassing testimony, graphic testimony, where, you know, things about Isaiah Thomas and James Dolan are being dragged through the mud. And if you're David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA, and your office is mere blocks away from where the Knicks play their basketball games, you've got to be crawling into the fetal position, sucking your thumb, just going, "Oh my God, what is going on here in this, in the biggest media market in the country?"
Well, and what about what this does for Isaiah Thomas's legacy? I mean, here's a guy who's beloved by his fans growing up, watching him play.
He's done.
He's done. He's absolutely finished. And once he loses this job, that happens, we will not see Isaiah Thomas around.
Yeah, he better save his money from this gig, because there is not a team in pro sports that will give him any kind of a position, whether it's in the front office or on the sideline.
Not even with that smile.
No, never again. And, you know, you just shake your head and you go, when is James Dolan going to make a move with Isaiah Thomas? There are a lot of people in the league that are recommending that Dolan fire Thomas and bring in someone like a Jerry Colangelo and someone who's well-respected to really turn things around. And I don't know, James Dolan doesn't seem to listen to anyone. He's kind of the spoiled brat. He got the keys to the car from his dad, Charles Dolan, and this is one of his toys. You know, you've got Cablevision, you've got the Knicks, and this is a toy.
He just wrecked his dad's Ferrari.
He's wrecking the Ferrari. He's not only wrecking it, he's like running it into multiple cars on the side of the street. He's drunk driving right now, and it's only a tragedy that David Stern can't take away the keys to the car and say, "You know what, I'm bringing someone else in, because you've run one of our marquee franchises in this league into the ground."
You get a Fiat now.
Yeah, you definitely get a Fiat. Our next story, the 13th biggest sports business story of the year, 2007, Spygate. We didn't know what Spygate was before. We knew about Watergate back in the 70s. This is Spygate. The New England Patriots, during the first week of the NFL season, New York Jets head coach Eric Mangini rats out the Patriots for spying and taping the Jets' signals. The Patriots won that game, but they were penalized very, very harshly by the league. They were fined a league record $500,000, and the franchise was fined $250,000, and head coach Bill Belichick was fined $500,000, and they're going to lose a first-round draft pick in the upcoming draft. Harsh penalties.
Well, that's like a Mark Cuban fine for the NFL, only worse. And, you know, this is unfortunate, because now everybody's talking, with the season that the Patriots are having right now, they're talking about, should there be an asterisk next to, you know, their record if they go undefeated this season? And it's unfortunate they have to do that, because they've had such success on the field that, you know, we'll have to see what becomes of the Patriots' legacy.
You know, it's really interesting, and we'll never know the answer to this question, but, you know, the Patriots have assembled some terrific talent. Tom Brady's having an MVP-type season. Randy Moss having an MVP-type season. Adalius Thomas is doing great things as a free agent signing for the defense. But I wonder, if this hadn't happened, and if the Patriots hadn't played with this enormous chip on their shoulder where they are just blowing teams out this year, would they be looking at an undefeated season? Maybe they would have let up. Maybe they wouldn't have that eye of the tiger that they've had all season long, because after this first week, people said, you know what, maybe they're not legitimate. Maybe they've been doing it by cheating. Maybe they've been doing it by smoke and mirrors. Maybe they shouldn't have won those Super Bowls. And since then, this team has played, quite frankly, very, very angry. And it's shown, and now we are looking at a historic season. They could become the first team since the 1972 Miami Dolphins to go through the season undefeated.
Well, and you know what's ironic about this, for me at least as a fan, that hasn't tainted my image of the Patriots at all. I've watched them. I've rooted for them this season. We talk about other athletes who have cheated, other teams who have cheated, and, you know, we badmouth them. But the Patriots, for some reason, I still, and other people I talk to, continue to root for them and have been able to forget that. I think everybody wants to see the perfect season.
Well, and guess what? I've got news for you. The Patriots weren't the only one spying. I mean, there are other teams in the league that were spying. The Patriots got caught. Eric Mangini turned them in. But I guarantee you, before Spygate, there were other teams that were videotaping other teams' practices and signals. And now everyone's on notice. The Patriots fully cooperated. They handed over all the video materials. There was no further penalties. And the Patriots have shown, quite frankly, that they're legitimate, I think. I don't think you get through this entire season undefeated.
From cheating and watching videotapes.
Yeah, I just don't see it.
I agree.
Our next story, headline number 12 of the year, the 12th biggest sports business story of 2007. The Chicago Cubs are for sale, and it looks like billionaire Sam Zell is going to sell the team most likely to John Canning Jr. And John Canning Jr., a lot of people like us would love to see Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, buy the team. But John Canning Jr., who is the chairman of Madison Dearborn Partners, he's a close friend of Bud Selig. So a lot of people give him the inside track to getting this team. And he will probably acquire the Cubs, Wrigley Field, other real estate assets related to the Cubs, and its 25% stake in CSN Chicago. So this will be a big deal, and there are some people that say this could be a deal that is valued at very close to $1 billion. You talk about that, Nathan. You're talking about NFL franchise value numbers.
You're talking about the big three in baseball. You're talking about the Cubs, you're talking about the Yankees, and you're talking about the Boston Red Sox. They have this established fan, this nationwide following, like Red Sox Nation. And, you know, the Cubs would be so much better off from all different perspectives, I think, if Mark Cuban was running that team. And as a Cubs fan myself, I'd love to see him come in there and not only do stuff on the field, but off the field to promote the Cubs brand. And I think that's great for him. I don't need another stiff owner in there for the baseball team to be successful.
Well, the Cubs have one of the top payrolls in all of baseball. They've signed Alfonso Soriano and Aramis Ramirez, and they re-signed Kerry Wood this offseason, even though that wasn't a huge contract. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the philosophies of a John Canning Jr. or whoever buys this team is. Are they going to spend money like they've spent in recent years? Are they going to not spend as much money? They'll own Wrigley Field, too. Will there be any changes to Wrigley Field? Anything done to them?
Not if you don't want riots in Chicago.
Yeah, but, I mean, even there's been advertising. Under Armour has advertising on the outfield walls now. There are slight things that have been done in recent years to try and promote revenue streams there, and it'll be interesting to see how that all happens. Our 11th biggest sports business radio story of the year, 2007, the 2008 Summer Olympics are on the horizon, and organizers and sponsors are gearing up for Beijing, China, August 2008. You know, I was there firsthand, saw it with my own two eyes in September in Beijing, saw some of the venues, saw the bird's nest where they're going to have the opening ceremonies. And I'll tell you what, these are going to be the most commercial Olympics in the history of the world. You've got 1.3 billion people in China. People are going to come from all over the world. It's going to be the most televised event in the history of TV. I mean, I don't think there's any event that's going to get more viewers than this event is going to get. You could have protesters. You could have pollution. You could have censorship of the media. There's all kinds of storylines that are going to take place for these Summer Olympics.
Well, yeah, and it just continues to get more and more corporate. I remember back in the 90s, there was the only sponsor I could remember was Coca-Cola. And every year there seems to be bigger and bigger sponsorships. And Beijing is one of the meccas for, I mean, as you know, one of the meccas for corporate sponsorship. There's giant billboards there and huge screens of all sorts of different companies. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting being there and seeing, you know, the Coca-Cola and the Nikes and the Adidas's, and Now you've got all these sponsors. And speaking of sponsors, it's really interesting that shares of the Olympic Games as partner sponsors and exclusive suppliers have returned 34% through November, compared with a 10% return from other blue chip U.S. stocks. So already, companies that have invested sponsorship dollars in the 2008 Olympics just this year, and we're not even in the actual year of the Olympics yet, they're seeing an enormous return on their investment, 34% compared to 10% return this year from other blue chip stocks.
I wish I could have got in on that. I'd be swimming pretty right now. But, you know, that's if the games happens. As of recently, they've started to talk about delaying the games because of pollution. Imagine what kind of do-goods they would have to do for all these sponsors if the games didn't take place at that time or were delayed.
The games will happen, but what might happen is some of the events, if they walk outside and they're choking on the air, you're either going to have athletes that say, you know what, I'm not competing today, and they drop out, or you're going to have events that are postponed. And I've already gone on record saying that the times for these outdoor events in Beijing will be amongst the slowest times in the history of the Olympics, because people are going to be choking on the air. And again, you know, there are so many storylines here, from the pollution to a lot of political protesters that are probably going to be there, to censorship of the media, because we're dealing with a communist country here. So what happens when the BBC or NBC are critical of the Chinese government or the pollution? Is that going to be censored? Will it ever make it over the airwaves? Those are the types of things. Athletes may boycott for political reasons. They may boycott because of the pollution, and they say, I don't want to compete. But the bottom line is this. From a sponsorship standpoint, you're looking at companies that are investing $2.4 trillion, not billion, trillion dollars into these Olympic Games. We are talking about the most commercialized Olympic Games ever. There's going to be 37 venues. They're spending $2 billion just to build the venues. Tons and tons of money. I mean, really cartoonish numbers when you talk about these Olympic
Games.
Well,
you know, I'm curious about the TV ratings, only because it seems like no matter where the Olympics are, it's being broadcast all over the world, to every country all over the world. Are we going to see higher TV ratings because it's in China? Or are the TV ratings going to be about the same because it's still being broadcast all over the world?
Well, I think you'll see high TV ratings, but the thing that's going to be interesting is NBC Olympics or NBCSportsOlympics.com, for the first time, they're going to devote over 200 hours
streaming video
online. So when we're at work, we can watch these events online in real time. Just like we've talked about with the NCAA March Madness and the Masters and some of these other events, this is going to be the first Olympic Games where we can sit at our computer and we can watch it live online. That is going to be cool. We're coming up with our final segment of the show. Got a quick headline to go over this week, and we'll preview next week's show with our top 10 sports business radio stories of 2007. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. This is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. We live in an age where everything is on the record. What we say anywhere, whether it's in an elevator, in an email, or during a conversation with a reporter, is now being broadcast instantaneously on YouTube, in a blog, or through the mass media. It's easier than ever to spot someone who has been traditionally media trained and is just giving you that same old boring PR speak. I want to help you navigate the tricky media landscape. When I'm not hosting Sports Business Radio, I team with former Nike PR director Lee Weinstein to form Evergreen Media Training. Evergreen Media Training assists individuals and groups by offering unique preparation and training catered to your specific needs. From explaining today's media environment to providing you with post-training monitoring and feedback, we'll guide you every step of the way. With nearly 40 years of combined experience working with some of the biggest names in the sports industry, we'll help you communicate your messages honestly, thoughtfully, and from the heart. For an overview and a list of services, visit evergreenmediatraining.com or email me at brian@sportsbusinessradio.com.
This is Sports Business Radio.
One quick headline from this week. It was a big one. Bill Parcells. He passes up an offer to become the VP of football operations with the Atlanta Falcons. He takes the same position, signs a four-year deal with Wayne Huizenga and the Miami Dolphins. Parcells is reportedly going to make more money than any front office executive or coach in the history of the NFL, Nathan.
What a tough year for the Atlanta Falcons. First Michael Vick, then Bobby Petrino, and now Parcells passing up. Hopefully they can bounce back next year.
Well, next week we are going to unveil our top 10 Sports Business Radio sports business stories of 2007. And I can give you a little hint. We've seen the Mitchell Report come out lately. We know about the fall of Michael Vick. Those will be amongst the top stories that we unveil in our top 10 and recap the year that was in sports business in 2007. Lots of thank yous on our show this week. Nathan Roach, Bobby Courser, Josh Blank, Darren Peck, Ron Barr, James Harris, and Doug Zanger, our sponsors. Morton's the Steakhouse, the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon, ProTrade.com, and Evergreen Media Training. A podcast reminder, you can catch our show on demand via podcast anytime you want. All you have to do is go to sportsbusinessradio.com and click on the podcast page. Guys, it's Christmas. What do you want for Christmas? Have you got all your Christmas shopping done, Nathan?
I just want to be with my family on Christmas.
Oh, that's beautiful, Nathan. Bobby?
Yeah, same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I listened to our show from last year, and you guys, you know, Bobby, you wanted something from Apple.
All right, I want a Nintendo Wii because I want to play Tiger Woods Golf. There it is.
Now,
okay.
Oh, I'm going to tell your wife. And Bobby wanted the Touch, but he's already got the iPod Touch, so Bobby has everything he wants. And really, we're selling our house, so I'm happy that we're selling our house. I want to find a really cool house in a nice neighborhood with other families. That's what I want.
He'll be
Christmas.
Living in my basement in the interim.
I might be living in your basement. So, lots of things coming up on our show next week. Like I said, the top 10 sports business stories of 2007. I'm Brian Berger. I'll talk to you next weekend, and I leave you this week with a very special Christmas greeting from my 3-year-old daughter, Sophia.
This is Sophia Berger. Merry Christmas!